Our team at Lifeway Leadership would like to personally invite you to join us in Nashville this October for Pipeline 2018. This conference is all about recruiting. So here's the thing. If you don't recruit leaders, you don't have anyone to develop. That's your first step. So if you want to learn more about how to recruit leaders more effectively and create a culture of leadership development in your church, then bring your team to Pipeline this fall. To register, just go to myleadershippipeline.com. Once again, that's myleadershippipeline.com. Now, enjoy the podcast. You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Atkins, and I'm here today with a guest co-host. You're kind of co-hosting, guesting.
Guest, co-host, host, guest, co. Whichever way we want to put it.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting today because with me is Brian Rose from Oxano. We get along really well, mostly because we have very similar brains. So
we share the same qualities with ADD, I think. That, and we chase rabbits and we see the same rabbits.
We won't. Yeah, that's the good news.
Yes.
And we'll tell you all about the rabbits. Today, though, specifically, we are talking about multi-site church. You guys know from listening to the podcast that that's something that I have a good bit of experience in and really enjoy and believe in and love to continue to talk about. So also as well, Brian has a great deal of experience in that and is walking a lot of churches through a lot of different scenarios with his work with Oxano. That's one of the reasons why we wanted to get on here today. Another reason is we are doing a boot camp in Dallas, September 18th and 19th, which you'll want to check out. We'll tell you about that a little later in the show. But the big thing that I want to start us off with is a question that I'll get a lot. And sometimes it's publicly and sometimes it's privately. But yeah. How is multi-site biblical?
Yeah, sometimes that question is it biblical? A binary question, right? Is multi-site even biblical? And we have to kind of go, yeah, it is. Now let's talk about how it's biblical, right?
Right.
And that really comes back to Acts 2. You know, you and I both, Todd, have led in multi-site environments, good-sized churches. And the reality is when we look at Acts 2, we look at the picture of the early church, it really was a multi-site concept in the beginning.
There's no video.
Yeah, there was no video. They didn't share set lists on Planning Center. But the church met in homes. The church met in various locations. And then even as we read Paul's letters, I mean, we can see the church. It was one church in multiple locations. We can see at the Jerusalem Council, there was a centralized leadership team. But it was still distributed. It was still very responsive to where it was. So I think the question is, yes, it's biblical. How is it biblical? Well, the church is always called to respond to its local context, right? God puts us in a place, in a location. We believe this is a fundamental piece of what we do at Oxano for a reason. Every church is unique, and part of that uniqueness is the context. Now, how multi-site comes around is, listen, there are some ways we can do church better. There are some ways we can do church easier. I mean, you can make a list of those things and say, hey, listen, by exporting some of our DNA to a context but still being responsive, you know, I think we see that.
I think most people that are opponents of multi-site church kind of paint it with a specific brush. So they would say, no, early church was not multi-site church at all. It was churches in different communities. Sure, there were letters that went forth. Sure, they were trying to maintain unity. Sure, they were trying to establish, you know, doctrine and DNA, if you want to go that far. But, Todd, it's not. I think what they're getting caught up in is a video-based model, first off. And they're just thinking, okay, you're trying to scale the church for, you know, your church's glory, not God's glory, to spread the church, not spread the gospel, all these things. But I would say, no, you have one view of it. And if you look at the New Testament, I would say if you really wanted to get super detailed, you might be able to argue that it's agnostic. It's either not for or against, but I think it's not hard to look and see how it is. It is something that's biblical. And so I would go ahead and say, if you're listening to this podcast and you disagree, I'm not sure why you tuned in the first place, because you probably would have already skipped over as soon as
many, many episodes ago.
Yeah, probably many episodes ago, actually. So
it's like asking if Awana is biblical, because I don't see Awana in the New Testament. I mean, I think I see it a little bit in some of the minor prophets in the Old Testament. In my experience of leading in some of the Awana situations.
You've led in Awana?
I was a jack of all trades. I'm a generalist. And so there's been seasons of leadership where I've led teams, even though
I never would have thought. I would never. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I never wore the vest.
In my experience, Awana's, I'm not going to say it's a cult or anything like that.
You know, there's no S on the end of it too, right?
Now you're busting me down on Awana?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you are, but now I can see it.
Yeah.
You know what? I can see it now. No, I mean it is a solid program and all that.
I love the content and character that's built in the kids.
Totally.
But there's moments around that game square that, you know, again, let's go back to those minor prophets. You know, I feel like there's moments where I was waiting for the fire to fall.
Hey, I will bring this back to multi-site real quick, because one of my experiences with Awana was when the people at the first campus were really, they were like, oh, well, of course we're going
to
do it.
Yeah, we have to do it. It's here. It's got to be there, right?
No.
Yeah, you're like, well, we rent a middle school on Sunday mornings.
But you don't understand.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the difference in sometimes, come bring it back there, Todd, that's the difference in the practice of the church versus the purpose of the church, right? And so when we come back into the purpose of the church, we can go, yes, multi-site is very biblical because we are called to go and make disciples. Part of going is being in maybe it's new communities of growth. Maybe there's an underserved part of the population and we realize we can do that. Now listen, the practice of the church, well, we may not export every program, and every program doesn't need to be exported. And so, you know, sometimes we get caught up in those lines there.
I like that. Go and be. Go and be.
Well, yeah.
All right. So when we get back to purpose, okay. So I love, you know, Culture Eat Strategy for Breakfast. Everybody thinks it's Michael Porter, but it's really hard to find where you can actually tie it back to him. There is a guy.
Attribute that quote, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there is a guy, and I'm losing it. So you can Google it and find it. I'm so sorry. At least I'm attributing it to someone. Culture Eat Strategy for Breakfast. No, but it gets its appetite from purpose.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's brutal.
Culture Eat Strategy for Breakfast.
But it gets its appetite from purpose.
Mm, that's good. And so
when you think about what the purpose of the church should be, and you think about the culture of your church, are those things aligned? Because we would all answer, I think, the purpose of the church based on Great Commission.
In a very general sense, we would say yes.
Yeah. Right?
In a very general sense, we'd say, yeah, I mean, we're about the Great Commission. We start to peel the layers back and say, okay, so how are we about the Great Commission where we are?
Right.
How are we about the Great Commission in this part of this place God has placed us?
Then it
gets a little fuzzy.
Well, I get what I'm trying to bring back into is the second question: what are the most common reasons to go multi-site?
Right. And part of that is, hey, listen, you know, we're going to be responsive. I think a lot of times multi-site is looked at as a church growth strategy, right? Well, if I'm going to grow my church, here's an easy way to do it: go put a new one out there somewhere, right? Everybody loves new. Everybody loves improved. You know. But I think at the core, when you think about purpose, you can look at from a missional lens, hey, there's a place where we have some people coming in from. A lot of times churches look at that, right? They look at the database, they say, well, look, there's an area where there's a pocket of people driving in, but there's growth or there's the opportunity there to reach.
Right.
Let's take this show on the road in some senses. Let's go reach them, you know, And I think at the heart of it, it needs to come back to that. Listen, we are called to reach people, and we are called to reach people over here as well. Multi-site is a replication of systems and processes that improves efficiency, and in some statistical studies, raises the chances of success higher than church planting because of the connection back in there.
All Lifeway research would tell you that they're both have very similar results from an evangelism standpoint, and both would wane about the same time as well. You know, the number of, you know, the first year, it's a lot more evangelistic than the fifth year.
Yeah.
It's a whole different ballgame. But whether it's a church plant or a multi-site.
Isn't that the story of our life too, right? That first year after coming to Christ, we're a lot more evangelistic than the fifth year. If we're not practicing and really kind of growing in our faith.
So
is that a rabbit trail?
It is a rabbit trail. I'm wanting for us to express the most common reasons people go multi-site. So the couple I would rattle off my head is some people will say, hey, evangelism. Some people will say, fill in the blank. But the reality is most people end up going to multi-site for practical reasons. Yep. They run out of space.
Don't want to add a third or a fourth service.
Absolutely. For us, it was zoning issues. We had acres and acres and acres of land that Fairfax County wouldn't let us use. And so we'd built a parking deck. We had a bajillion services. And finally, it's just like we can no longer grow here. We have a number of people coming from these pockets, these areas. And we, you know, the cry began to be more about small groups and more about saying, hey, we don't want people to commute. You can't commute to community. So we want you to, you know, we just said we want people to go and be versus go and do or come and do or right. come and see, mm-hmm. go and be. And so the thing for us was, hey, we're going to go. We've got people that were already engaged in their community where they live, work, and play. Why are we asking them to commute in for service? And
we tell people in those settings, hey, you need to invite your neighbors. You need to invite your friends. And they're looking at us going, our neighbors and friends would have to drive 45 minutes to an hour to come to this service. Right. Are you kidding me? You know, on some levels, they may not say that out loud, but they're thinking to do that. I know we looked at an area of town. I was on staff, led a multi-site initiative, and we saw this tremendous growth. We were in Houston.
Right.
There's a huge development about to go in the northwest side of town, like huge, multiple high schools, huge for right. one community. And our senior leader said, we need to be there. But I know a lot of times churches are also looking around in their context and saying, hey, listen, our context around us has changed. We still want to reach where we are, but we right. also know we need to reach who we are, not just where we are.
Yeah, we also had kind of a rule that if there was a Bible-believing, preaching church that was within a certain proximity, we wouldn't go there, even if it was a great venue. But that was, you know, early on.
Yeah.
And a lot has changed in the D.C. landscape in the last 10 years, especially with the number of church plants, it being a sin city with North American Mission Board and a couple other denominations as well. I mean, you know, a lot has changed there. So
I think there's a lot of reasons, a lot of them, as we've talked about, very practical to go multi-site. But at the core, if the reason isn't evangelical, if the reason isn't the gospel at the heart of it, you know, we've got to bring both and along. There's got to be a coin with two sides there. Because, and I don't think anybody's questioning that. But I think sometimes we can get very pragmatic in our leadership, right?
Yep.
And we can forget that it's not just kind of where we go, it's who is where we go. And we have to just pay attention, I guess is what I'm saying there.
Good, good. All right. So let's talk about some of the best strategies for multi-site. Because you and I were talking before the podcast about some different things. We were walking through some of our questions and
yeah.
You know, this one for me is if you look at 12 different churches, they're going to have 12 different ways of doing it. But what are some of the best strategies that you've encountered and kind of lay those out?
Man, I'm not going to don't know if I'm going to put this at the top of like, hey, this is one of the best strategies, but I just got to unfold the menu for a minute and say, hey, listen, it's not just large churches that are planning to, you know, pipe a video somewhere anymore.
Right.
I mean, when I think about strategies for multi-site, the landscape of multi-site is so broad now that, I mean, I could take you to far West Texas, like the plains of West Texas, out further west than Lubbock, and show you a church in a town of 13,000 that's essentially pursuing a multi-site strategy. Now, they're not going to call it churches. He calls it disciple-making communities, but in six-man football town. So this pastor's heart is to reproduce, to multiply the church and the influence of the church into these six-man football towns. Well, the six-man football means our high school is not big enough to field a full football team. So there's usually 11 or 12
Texas,
people.
So we have to have one.
You're required. It's in the charter of the town.
It's in part of the high republic.
School. You got to have, and the stadium's got to be significant. It's got to be the tallest, you know, structure in town. But, you know, listen, they're reaching towns of 130 people.
Right.
With what is essentially, in some ways, a house church multi-site movement. And so, I mean, you know, you talk about best strategies. It is, there's a lot of strategies. And listen, God is blessing that. There's people moving to be a part of that movement. Like they're right. moving from places with Walmarts to live out there, you know, but because God is at work, because the gospel is multiplying, you know. So we talk about best strategies. You know, we've got to see there's a huge spectrum there.
Yeah. Contextually speaking, you have to look at your community, look at your church and figure out what's best for you. When we were first starting, I think it was like 2005, so that's what, 13 years ago. And it wasn't on the absolute cutting edge, bleeding edge, but it was on the front end of the movement. And so we were in a community and connected with, you know, Life Church and North Point and Seacoast. And so what was really weird at the time is you'd have like a North Point who was like, okay, all the sets at every location have to be exactly the same.
Yeah.
So that when the camera goes down and there's going to be an 8-foot Andy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, all this stuff. And it was like the
you will
just
not
spending,
know whether you're in the room
yeah,
or not.
Yeah. It was the illusion of that it's there. Then you would have like Seacoast.
Yeah.
And I affectionately referred to them as the kings of the brown bag. Because they're like, if there's a location.
Yeah.
That will seat some people, we're going to go. And if it doesn't work, we're going to kill it.
Yeah.
They didn't care. They're like, if we're going to go, we're going to go as many places as we can with as, I don't know, not stripped down, but it was like, we're just going to, they didn't seem to care as much about the, making sure everything was exactly, you know, perfect. It was,
yeah,
man, we're just going to go.
Like we don't have to replicate every bit of the environment, you know?
And it was just their purpose, their mission was so their passion was as such as that we're just going.
I think it's funny to look back on North Point too, which I think is, you know, we would agree. One of kind of the, when you think about category leaders in multi-site, you think, well, you know, a North Point, especially if you've lived in the Southeast, especially if you've, you know, you kind of been around that.
Right.
But you remember it all started with, hey, we've got this room that we're outgrowing. Let's make an exact mirror opposite on the other side of the stage.
Somehow I was at Catalyst the first year.
Yeah.
And I still don't know exactly how I ended up there because there's only like 1,500 people here.
Yeah.
And
I was there too.
Tyler was on the podcast.
Yeah, it was a great episode.
What we were talking about was that very thing. Like, it was North Point had just gone from like a small group to thousands of people overnight. And he was doing that. There were two exact mirror stages, and he would preach on one and then walk around the curtain to the other and preach again and walk around
through
the curtain.
Through that little back hallway. They had that little back hallway, and he'd just kind of pop out on one. And you didn't really know where you were going to sit when you got there too. And so I thought that was, but remember that started there. And then they said, okay, now we've outgrown these two rooms and it's hard to get, you know, it's hard to share a third wall with a third stage. So where can we go and how do we replicate this? And you know, you've got someone, I think I saw over the weekend on social that, or can I say social or is it social media?
You can say social.
Okay.
This is a safe place.
I think I saw Craig Rochelle in their 31st campus pastor.
Oh, I think that's low.
I thought that was, but you know, you've got them and I've been visited one of the Life.Church campuses in West Palm Beach, Florida, and one in Oklahoma, and they're the exact same building, right? And so you've got that strategy of, you know, they have everything marked and timed and growth, you know, KPIs and all those things you want to look at, spreadsheets, you get to this size and you add this staff member, you get to this size and you get this building and this, I mean, it's all very coordinated. And then you got the guys that are just like, hey man, there's a church across town that would like for us to merge.
Right.
Let's go for it, you know? And within 2 or 3 months, they're all of a sudden a multi-site church. And that, you know, there was no strategy. It was just like, hey, listen, right, God has opened this door. Let's be responsive to that and move in there.
Well, I think what's interesting too, so last month I was in Denver and the Orchards, great church. Mm-hmm. So this is just a side note and something I found fascinating. So if you went to there, you know what? You would say, oh, this is a Life Church. Why? Because Life Church made their plans available to everybody. And it's a great plan.
It's a sharp plan, isn't it?
It is.
The and way so, they set up it, yeah. It's really
it's set up. The building is like the exactly the same, which is super efficient because
kids ministry guys, entrance, oh, main totally. Worship entrance, great flow through the ministry areas. I mean, it's
so fantastic. Guys, one of the things, if you're listening to this and you haven't started multi-site yet, I mean, there's plenty of people that have done it. And they've done it all different ways, and all of them have made mistakes, and most of them are out there. You know, if you want to look and learn, most of it is out there to find. And you know, one of the things that we pride ourselves on is we spend all our days learning, so that we can bring some of that to you. But
well, that's one of the first questions, even when I'm working with a church, Todd, that's you know considering going multi-site, even said, hey, we're going to do this. One of the first things we do is we look at the models. Hey, what are the models out there? What do you know? Because there's so much out there and we've seen it so many times. And then we ask the question, and this is an exercise from the boot camp. Okay, so what do we apply to what we learned here? And then what are we going to avoid with what we've learned here, right? What makes sense with us and what doesn't make sense with us? Because there is no one-size-fits-all multi-site strategy.
No, you can't get that off the copy machine or you're going to find yourself in a
I think a lot of churches
spot.
Have. Right. Try to get it off the copy machine. And there's a lot of best practices, but that doesn't mean it's your best practice.
Well, and when it comes to things like best strategies for multi-site as well, I mean, you know, it part of it depends on your budget. And so when we look at cost, there are all different models as well. I mean, if again, looking at North Point as an example, when they first started out, it was on DVD.
Yeah.
They would just send a DVD to another place.
And I can remember how much it costs to have to broadcast video
it's
to
insane.
Our campus. And I'm now it's gonna, like, well, it's called much. Facebook Live. It's multi. I can drive home from church on Sunday morning. I literally, in my town, I live in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and I will.
Murfreesboro.
Get it right.
Have you ever seen the comedian who talked about his time in Murfreesboro?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's
pretty funny. But I'll pull up Facebook and there'll be like 4 or 5 local churches streaming live. And I'm like, this is totally like multi-site could be like, hey, come over to my house and somebody has provided me some guided questions and I'm going to invite my cul-de-sac to sit and watch a Facebook live stream. And man, we can, you know, I'm not saying that's multi-site necessarily, but I think the possibilities are there. Right. Yep. It's almost limitless now in what to do that. And I think, you know, that's the big thing is a lot of people ask how much does it cost and how long does it take? Right. How much time do we need to invest? That's question number 4. How long does it take to launch a new campus?
Okay. So the quickest I ever launched one was 60 days.
60 days. Come on.
I promise.
You already had a core team cooked and ready to go?
I have for sure had the guy. His name is Michael Kelsey. And if you don't look him up on Facebook, Twitter. You can look him up on Facebook. I don't know if he's even there, but he's definitely on Twitter. unbelievable guy that I knew would absolutely kill it. And it was like, the way I got it across was this, again, this is early, early days. So before that, our church would say, hey, we're not going to go anywhere unless we can find 500 seats or more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause that's the way it was 12 years ago. I mean, that's just the way you did it. Now it's completely different. But so I said, I presented it as a micro campus and that it would be easier to do and all this stuff. And it was stripped down.
Because you wanted to set the expectations bar low?
No. It wasn't going to have, wasn't going to start with childcare. Yeah, yeah. There's several things.
Yeah.
And so we could get it on Sunday evenings because it was a performing arts theater. It's a black box.
Yeah, yeah.
So it'd hold about 200. And that thing, until it moved, was in multiple services from day one.
Right.
It's now its own thing. We actually merged two campuses, Silver Spring and Bethesda. That's a whole other story for a whole other day. But the cool thing is that one didn't cost a lot to do because it was low on staffing. It was smaller. The venue was vacant on a Sunday night. It was dark, so they didn't care. We dropped in a satellite on their roof so that they, this again,
a
this
satellite is our, dish, right?
Oh, it was back in the day, man.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, so you're not interested in weekly revenue? Cause everybody told me no.
Yeah.
This is DC. So everybody's like, McLean, no.
Yeah.
You guys are the like Jesus people that come on secular radio and absolutely not. We're a theater. And then I would just keep going back, Penny.
Yeah.
And saying, So you're telling me you're not interested in weekly revenue. This is in 2008 as well at this time. So this was all nonprofits, especially theaters, just saw the money dry up because everybody lost their money in the stock market and everything else. And so finally they were like, yes, we'll let you in. And part of it was because I said, you can broadcast in, you know, from London, Les Mis or whatever. Like, you know, let us help you. No strings attached. You can use it for whatever you use it. We want to use it for all that. So other than that, so that sounds like really costly. But in the grand scheme of things, it's
well,
not.
If you don't have to, I mean, a lot of putting together the timeline is building the team. So you already said, hey, listen, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of space there. And you were in a place where the brand of McLean probably, you know, helped some of that growth. You already had a room with equipment. And I mean, a lot of the timeline is where are you going? And how long does it take to get if you're going to use?
And we'd done it a lot too already.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
By that time, it's like, okay, we kind of have this down.
You had it down. Now, but 60 days still seems.
It was stupid.
Yeah. Still seems like.
It was basically Memorial Day to Labor Day was the timeline.
Okay. So yeah, you just kind of.
It was. I mean, that was
a summer to launch it. And that's the other thing to take into consideration on the timeline is when, you know, work backwards from really launch. And I would even coach. Think about a month beyond the launch because so many times we run to the finish line. And when I'm coaching my kids, you know, I'm always telling them, okay, there's a finish line and you always run through it because our tendency is to pull up right at the finish line in a foot race or something like that. I'm a pretty experienced racer. I don't know if you can tell
like
that. Yeah, it's the physique. But the thought is that, you know, we got to think even in a multi-site launch beyond that, you know, the launch day is important. Day one, you only have one day one, right?
Right.
But if you're not prepared for what happens beyond that, you know, you tend to do that. And so, yeah, I think you got to start with that finish line. On my note, it does matter when day one happens, the beginning of school, a January, February, depending on the climate, new season.
Easter's
okay. Easter's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a fun day to have a day one, but it can also create some false impression. You don't want day one like, you know, like last weekend in my church, you know, the weekend before July 4th. You know, you don't want a day one where,
brutal.
You know, you're gonna do that. So I think timeline, thinking about working backwards from there, typically, what do you think? 4 to 6 months is a healthy, doesn't kill your staff.
Yeah, I would say you can do it.
If you've got the resources, if you've got.
Your first one, you're going to need a year.
Yeah. I'm working with a church in Colorado, Denver area again. And, you know, we just started having the question about, okay, so tell me, you know, Alexana, we talk about our vision frame. I said, tell me your values, those missional motivators.
Right.
And they're like, well, here's our value. And it was kind of a loose, I mean, it wasn't anything articulated. They all kind of looked at the pastor and said, tell them what the values are. And this is like the executive level staff. They're like, okay, pastor, tell them what our values are. And I was like, whoa, time out. We can't, help people serve. We can't build leaders to serve across town if we don't define the playing field which they're serving. And values do that, right? Values are kind of those boundary lines of culture. So if we can't reproduce a culture that we haven't defined, right? And so if we don't, if we're unclear here, the famous, you know, Howard Hendricks, if it's a mist in the pulpit, it's a fog in the pew.
Yep.
If we're not clear on why we do and how we do ministry here, we're going to go across town and they're going to be, I think when I look at churches that, and I'm going to use air quotes here on a podcast, that have failed in multi-site.
Right.
It's not that they didn't take the timeline or the cost into consideration. It's they didn't know who they were to begin with.
Yeah.
They didn't understand who they were, the DNA, the identity of the church, to then be responsive to the location, the context of the church. And so timeline, there may be, you may need to shore up some things about your vision and who we are in order to have a healthy replication.
Yeah, I would say if you don't understand that, don't do it.
Yeah.
If you don't understand who you are and have that clearly articulated, don't do it. And that doesn't mean you've got something that you can point to that's framed.
Yeah.
It means, no, is that, has that been actualized? So I know you guys would say, hey, it's okay to have a couple of aspirational values. Mm-hmm. You should have a couple of aspirational values.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, the most of your values should be something that are actualized or close.
If you can't walk people to the last decision you made and name the value that was involved in how you made that decision.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not talking about just like, you know, I'm talking about a true decision, not a choice. Great podcast, Koppelman and Seth Godin. I don't know if we promote other podcasts. I wouldn't recommend it.
Simon Sinek for sure has been on here before. So.
Okay. Well, I would say it's a PG-13 rated podcast, but I love the influence there. And they talk, they have a little digression about the difference in the choice and the decision, right?
Oh, have you listened to Choiceology?
I have not, but I'm writing that down right now.
Chip and Dan Heath?
Yeah.
So they wrote like Made to Stick and
yeah.
a couple of those really good things. But Choiceology is really cool because it's psychology.
So we're not talking about like making choices, but the last decision we made is a staff. If we can't point to the value within that, then we don't necessarily know what we're going to replicate.
I really want to say I'll see you and raise you, but I don't think I should do that. Well, I kind of just did.
Yeah, I mean,
story.
At this point, story.
The last story you told from the stage, was it connected to your values, and did you highlight that and bring that out and make sure everybody understood it?
Yeah. Around Oksana, we would say there's five irreducible questions of leadership. What are we doing, which we call mission? Why are we doing it? Values. How will we do it? We call strategy. When are we successful? Mission measures. And where is God leading us? Vision proper. We'd say that's kind of the basic building blocks of identity that is, hey, if we can't replicate that, if our highest level leaders can't really kind of walk us through that, then we may need to pause a beat and say, okay, listen, do we know what we're trying to replicate with multi-site yet? We know it's a great idea. We know we have a very big need for it. We know there's an opportunity there, whether that's a population thing, whether that's a church thing. But, man, are we ready is the real timeline question there.
I just want to sing, people get ready, Jesus is coming. What is that? It's like got to be from the 90s
or
80s.
That was actually, I think it was a Jesus Movement song even further back than that. But if I'm not mistaken, it may have been DC Talk. Maybe it was just Toby Mac. But I think there was a little Kirk Franklin influence.
I don't know.
It's fuzzy. It's you know, it's a part of my life that I've repented from. No, I'm just kidding. I love it.
You could probably turn into your local Christian radio station. They're still playing it.
Yeah, it's definitely a DC Talk.
I don't know what it is.
I'm pretty sure it is.
All right. Okay, so last question, and people are thanking us for this. Getting to the last question, how do you staff for a multi-site? You know, what do you look for in a campus pastor? Everybody always thinks campus pastor, but
yeah.
It may be more than that. How do you staff for multi-site?
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. And you're right. They do start with campus pastor. And the big question of campus pastor is what?
Does he preach?
Yeah. Does he preach? Right. Are we going to, is this a video? And is he already on our team? Is this an internal hire? Is it already a part of our church, or is this an external hire?
Right.
Do we bring somebody in or build somebody up?
Do you want my answer to that?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your always answer? You have two choices when it comes to leaders. You have two choices when it comes to campus pastors. You can build them or buy them.
Yeah.
Build them. Why? Because we just spent the last 10 minutes digressing on how important culture and values and all these things are. And it's very, 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 very difficult to do that externally. If you hire someone externally for any leadership position, it's because there's an element of the culture that you want to shift or change.
Right.
That's the only reason to do it. Otherwise, do that. What are you doing right
or
now?
Or you're trying to build in a new pattern. You haven't necessarily, I think the question around leadership development, leadership pipeline, you guys have been a great leader in that the last years. I think the conversation in the church is different now in the last 2 to 3 years than it was 5 to 10 years ago when we were leading multi-site, right?
Right, right.
And so at that time, the concept of leadership development in the church was a lot less intensive, was a lot less present. And there was probably more of a reason to bring someone in. And so I wouldn't say you shouldn't ever bring someone in. But it, again, you better know who you're bringing in, and there better be a match to who you are versus just, you know.
Again, if you don't have the person, don't do that. Don't do it either. I mean, so from a staffing perspective, I do think you have multiple models. So you have the opportunity to say, okay, is this going to be some positions you would say, is this a staff paid position or a part-time position or a non-paid position? We had people that worked full-time, you know, for us that weren't even paid. They just had the life stage and place that they could do that. And so don't think of it as paid and non-paid. When you think about leadership pipeline and when you think about, you know, positions and responsibility and authority, don't think about paid and unpaid. Think, you know, where this person is and what responsibility that you're giving them. So I would say from a staffing perspective, we would try to start as lean as possible. If we were starting a larger, not a micro campus, it would be three.
What were those three?
Groups were super important. So I would have campus pastor and either that person was overseeing men's groups or couples groups. Mm-hmm. It was like a groups thing. I would always have a male and a female under them. One was doing women's stuff, and she was either doing internal teams or external teams, or he was doing internal teams and external teams in addition to groups most of the time. So, and missions would be under whoever was doing the outreach. So we were big on the big three, I would say. it's like, okay, we know we're going to have a service. We know we need to have biblical community, and we know we need to serve people.
Yeah.
Do we need Awana?
So that's
not necessarily
what you're coming back to is a strategy driven.
Oh, absolutely.
Staffing, right. Our strategy,
scalability,
and
scalability.
Yeah. And so, we would always come back and say, what are the people groups that we're trying to reach as well? Like, we may not hire a student pastor, but we are definitely going to have some form of children's minister, children's director, children's pastor who receives money for this. And this and the difference here for me was always accountability, right? I loved having high capacity volunteers, and if that person couldn't lead leaders, then they weren't a candidate. But I did want somebody who was accountable for making sure our influence among families and our ability to reach families and build consistency into that weekend experience was high.
What I tended to do was say, hey, I don't need a person who's at least to start, and depending on the demographics of the location. The other thing you can't do is not pay attention to the zip code demographics and recognize, uh-oh, we're going to have way more preschool.
Yeah.
Or, uh-oh, we're going to have way more kids. Or, oh, I hired a kids person. I have like 30. oh, well, you just made a big mistake. So what we would do is say, hey, we're going to go in, we're going to figure out in that first 90 days. So I would say the 90 days leading up to, you hit on this before, 90 days leading up to launch and 90 days post-launch are like where everybody is just on a 12 on a scale of 1 to 10.
You don't have a job description red. 3 months prior to launch and 3 months after launch. Well, right?
You do, but it's negotiable.
It's that line down at the bottom that says and other duties as required.
We don't know
right?
where it's going to happen until we get there. Yeah. And so it was okay. We're going to kind of, you know, morph as it goes. So that internal person, they would be over children's, but they have the ability to then bring in part-time people for that, because day of is when it's going to demand the most. Mm-hmm. But I just need a really good leader there. I don't need a good doer. I need a good equipper and builder of other people, not you're going to do all of it on Sunday and nearly kill yourself. It's no, I want, you know, a couple part-time roles. If you haven't done a great job, and early on, it's not doing a great job or not. It's, if you're growing quickly, somebody's going to be calling on Saturday to find leaders for Sunday morning in the children's area. Now, is that a healthy, sustainable model? No, absolutely not. And if you've been around for a long time, that shouldn't be your weekly your weekly schedule. It's Saturday. Uh-oh, I got to cover spots. That's obviously have a leadership placement, not leadership pipeline.
Yeah, that's a sign of an issue if you're consistently having to call.
But when you launch, man, it's a different animal.
I mean, think about it. The thing that really, when God blesses the most, all of a sudden now, that's sometimes we have to scramble the most, right? And so, I don't know.
All right. So how do you want to wrap this thing up? That I gave one opportunity for, or one scenario for staffing, but there's plenty of other staffing strategies. Some people would say, hey, we're going to launch a great big campus with a bunch of staff. Great. If you've got the money to be able to do that, I guess that's okay, but you know, be sure that you are actually leveraging the people of the church to reach the people in their community.
Yeah, yeah, you can overstaff
easily
and miss the fact that a lot of people respond to a multi-site, you know, to go in and be a part of that because there's something in them that says, "Hey, I want to be a part of something new." And when you give them the ability to be that pioneer, to be on that front edge. Especially sometimes in a portable situation, like, I recognize, man, when I gave guys, men, and this is, I'm not trying to be misogynistic here. I'm just saying sometimes men don't have enough to physically do in the church. Like they're not wanting some of these other roles, but man, you say, hey, listen, get there at 6 a.m. Boom, I already wake up early anyway. Sweat a little bit, set up chairs, put up pipe and drape, help us do this thing. They can come to church with their family then and feel like I have done something today.
They want to do meaningful work.
And
they,
sometimes you can staff that meaningful work away from people because in our minds we're trying to get things done.
Oh, it's an inconvenience for you. So here's I would say what's an interesting balance. So when you are launching a campus, be sure it's for the right reasons. Second of all, be sure that you announce, hey, don't go to this campus unless you're going to lead or serve because we need your seat for lost people.
Absolutely.
Don't come because it's closer to your home and you think you're going to sit and soak and get all the amenities of the current location, the current regional church, because that ain't going to happen. We're starting this lean and we're asking people to, you know, come in and serve. And just like you said, what's really interesting is there's almost this sleeping apostolic thing in some people that it's like, where on earth were you for the last 6 years you've been coming? Where were you? And they never saw the need, or they felt like they weren't being asked to do anything meaningful.
That contributes to the actual Great Commission.
Which should remind us as we're giving announcements or we're trying to get people to come into our children's ministry, desperation is not a good look. You're not going to get leaders if it's you're trying to guilt people into serving, or it doesn't have, it's not tied into your vision and values and is compelling enough to move me to serve. And when you do that, you better do it in a clean way and make sure that your systems and processes aren't crazy difficult for me to get through in order to serve, and that I have a clear understanding of what my job is. So a lot of what we do in Pipeline, frankly, is those very things. And I would say, if you're listening to this and you're going to do multi-site and you don't have a clear, clean pipeline, you've got to do that. You've got to do that, or you're risking failure, or you're just going to have a massive budget to pay for it.
One other quick thought that you kind of hit on, and I know we'll land the plane with this expectations. I think sometimes we're afraid of setting the real expectations of what's going to happen. We don't want to tell people what it's really like because they may not go, right? And so we don't want to tell them, you got to serve every Sunday. Yeah, we're not doing this so that you can drive, 30 minutes less or 15 minutes less. It may not have all, we're afraid of some of that because they're like, well, they won't go if we do that. But the reality is the worst yet is for them to go for a couple of weeks and realize, we're out of here because this isn't what we thought it was going to be. So I think setting expectations is a part of that vision casting, Todd. Just right up front, making sure people understand as best you can at that time, because it's always going to change, and build in the hey, we have to be flexible because we don't know yet what God's going to do here. And so be flexible, be in the work, and let's go. I love it.
All right. So thank you for listening to 5 Leadership Questions today. If you are interested, Brian and I are doing a boot camp in Dallas for 2 days where we will systematically walk through kind of step by step and help you walk away with a plan.
Prepare for launch, yeah.
For multi-site.
And the cool thing is designed for teams. So
that's right.
Bring 3 to 5 people. Let's walk through.
Yeah, it's like one price for a bunch of people. We're not trying to plan. Do onesies and twosies here. We want you to get to something that's practical and applicable as quick as possible. So if you want more information on that, go to oxano.com/bootcamps and you'll find more information there. And if you haven't already subscribed, do so in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you'd like, or Google now. Google's doing podcasts.
I know.
Listening. It's great. So do that there, and please, please, please leave us a rating and review. Thanks for listening.